we don't appreciate to be prevailing, because otherwise it will be a chaos in our lives, even though we know that it's landing all over the world, but it's affecting our country really. I also had the bereavement of my three grandsons who had a car accident. We buried them a week before last. That Saturday, two were at the university, one was in grade 7. And my brother's daughter also passed away. So we just take everything to God's hand. He's the one who knows, who gave them the program. Also,
unexpenditure, it means no delivery of services. And I'm trying to link this TG with what we have on page 9.
Around here, we also had the bereavement. And who else? Kulela. Dhaka also had bereavement. And who else? And Honorable Begu. So, I passed the way to put everything in God's hands. That we accept everything because it's not according to our plan. We have two bridges. These are the both belong. Museum will be bracing us. There's a little bit of change, and even though we know that it was indicating 9 to 11, we're starting at 10 and we're finishing at 11:30. So, I think for the CEO, we have to introduce a team to answer that we must know each other from now until Jesus come back. I don't know. Can you do that favor to us?
Good morning. Can you hear me? Oh,
your mic.
Good morning, sir. Is it working? Thank you very much for welcoming the Luthuli Museum. My name is Roxana Omar. I'm the director of the Luthuli Museum. On my right is Mr. Thulani Thusi, who is the heritage educator from the Luthuli Museum. And I think some portfolio members might have already met him when you visited the Luthuli Museum a little while back. And further to my right is Mrs. Nanam Doneli, my personal assistant and very integral and important individual who's played quite an important role in the setup of the Luthuli Museum. I do know, Chair, that we appear to be a very young team, but that's what the Luthuli Museum is about. It's about generating and invigorating the youth to have an interest in his legacy. So I think we are poised, well poised, especially with the two people present to help us to develop that. I've got a presentation for you. Obviously, we're having to present our annual report. And thank you.
My name is Deidre Sanevold, and I'm a member of the DA office.
That's okay.
My name is Nikki. I'm the part of entry research for our culture.
We need everyone.
Very much, you are all welcome. We can now start giving you a brief time. Over to you.
Thank you.
Let's wait for 1 minute.
Thank you very much. As you can see, we at the Lutuli Museum are here. We've been invited to present the annual report of the Lutuli Museum for the year ended March 2007. Sorry, can you hear me? I think I've introduced everybody here. The Lutuli Museum is one of 9 legacy projects, and it was opened to the public on the 21st of August 2004. Most of the staff in that period were appointed on a month-to-month basis contract. And the funds for 2004-2005 were given to the institution in 2005-2006. So in if one looked at the financials for 2005-2006, one would have seen that we were given a lump sum amount. It looked as though we had $7 million given to us, but in fact what happened was we received 2 financial years grants in the following financial year. In terms of when the museum started, the Department of Arts and Culture purchased the assets and set up the institution for set up the Lutuli Museum. And in May 2005, the financial officer was appointed on a 1-year contract and made a permanent employee in July 2006. Now, this is quite critical because when we come to the financials, one will appreciate why the financials were in the manner that they were. Also, the current director, that's myself, I was appointed in August 2006, and in that period I had to finalize 2 annual reports within a 6-month period, which was the first annual report that was presented for the 31st March 2006, even though it wasn't in my period, and the one that I am presenting today. Just to give you some background there. When I arrived, there weren't any policies in place until after August 2006, and we finalized the organogram for the Lutuli Museum after 2006. The job descriptions were also finalized. Again, this is all being stated to you because it was an institution, it still is an institution in its setup period. job description for any permanent employees were only finalized after August 2006. Job adverts appeared in the newspaper in November 2006. As I stated earlier on, I won't cover this again. And when I arrived, I worked with contract staff and volunteers to set up the governance structures of the Luthuli Museum. And two of the people who were volunteers, one of them was a volunteer and earned nothing from the institution, was Mrs. Nalam Zameli. And Mr. Tulani Tusi was a contract worker who was paid from a month-to-month basis. We had no audit committee, as stated in our audit report. We had no risk assessment, and we had no investment policy. However, the institution didn't sit down in inertia. It, in fact, engaged in a lot of educational activities in that period. And I'm now going to hand over to Mr. Tusi, who will tell you a little bit about the educational activities of the Luthuli Museum.
Thank you, Director. As my director said, that there were some staff that were appointed on contract. In 2006 and 2007, I was also appointed to on contract. But we tried to do our best in 2006, 2007 in educational activities of the Luthuli Museum. One of the aims of the Luthuli Museum to increase its visitors to the museum, and in order to this, is some of the museum core functions like education had to be profiled. Firstly, the museum undertook the understanding its visitors' profiles and try to tailor, make program and activities to increase a regular visitorship. In the first year of operations of the museum had 923 visitors. And in 2005 to 2006, we had 9,110 visitors. And in this year, under review of the increase of the number of visitors, to 22,301 people. This was done through exhibition and very specific targeting programs for the specific audience. And we also went to oral history training programs. There were 30 people from the area of Kwatuguza that participated in the oral history training program. This meant that the museum could use these newly trained oral history collectors. The rationale behind this was to empower a number of locals who could record the stories of locals that knew Chief Luthuli and his family. This program provided very successful, as a number of those trainees, oral history collectors were able to increase the new histories of the Luthuli Museum collection. Database of arts and crafts personnel. The purpose of this database was to get a better understanding of the number of artists and different skills that live and work in the Ilembe area. As a museum, we are always looking for the expertise of skills, artists, and crafters. And we also need to do this so that we could identify markets and channels for very skilled people in our area. Auditions and performers in Kwatuguza area. Once again, the Luthuli Museum felt that by building such a database, it could have a good understanding of the number of performers that are allocated in the area that use them and activities in the museum interest. For an example, in December 2006, learners from different schools were auditioned to determine their ability to participate in public performance. These were several groups that performed poems that were written. while the other learners were performing plays that they had scripted in their spare time. The aim was to involve learners in the museum while also to encourage their creative talents. Exhibitions. The Little Museum has three exhibitions in their period under review. These were The Black Christ, which was done by Ronald Harrison. The museum also opened the Unseen Photograph exhibition by Dr. Peter Makubane during Umdebo Festival. And therefore, the curator also done the exhibition on the life and times of Chief Albert Luthuli using the photographs of Ranjit Kali to contend with the KwaZulu-Natal provincial launch of the 48th commemoration of Chief Albert Luthuli's death. That was for the museum was chosen a venue for that event. And also this exhibition attracted a large of audience to the museum. Important visitors that came and visited us at the museum. The museum was host to a variety of important and prominent visitors who visited the Luthuli Museum. For example, the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal, Sondebele, Dr. Peter Makubane, the Minister, Geraldine Fraser Moleketi, and Deputy Minister, Mr. Moleketi, and also we were also visited by S.R. Natano, President of Singapore, with his wife, and also with other dignitaries from Singapore, and also the members of parliament, they came to visit the museum. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tulani. I'm now going to hand over to Nana Mzaneli, who will give you some background about the setting up of the administration of the Luthuli Museum.
Thank you very much, my director. As the museum was being set up, lots of things were done by myself. For example, filing system for correspondence, grants, and receipts. The administration of the Luthuli Museum had to be set up. Correspondence, grants, and receipts had to be filed, and as a volunteer of the Luthuli Museum, when it opened, I played a role in setting up the administration of the museum. For the database of suppliers, as required by the legislation, the museum advertised the suppliers of goods and services to be registered on its database. All of this information has to be captured and systemized into categories, which I took to do for the Luthuli Museum. Designing of forms for leave, sick leave, special leave, petty cash, purchase orders, and service orders. This task was a big one of the Luthuli Museum. We had to collect different examples of these forms and then tailor them to suit our institution. I undertook to collect these forms by conducting different institutions and designed forms to suit the Luthuli Museum situation. Typing of policies and correspondence. In response to public inquiries, getting prepared policies for the Luthuli Museum Council, I undertook the task of typing all this for the Luthuli Museum. Together with administrative assistant, I undertook to set up council meetings and liaise with the travel agents to get travel bookings done for the museum in the period that I was a volunteer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to take you through the financials, but before I do that, I think it is important, while it might appear very sort of mundane and standard and pedestrian, that in fact the Luthuli Museum, we're just telling you a whole host of things about setup of an organization. I think it's very important to note that it was very critical for the Luthuli Museum to have these pillars in place because it was setting up a new institution and we had to set up, there was no toolkit that we had on hand to satisfy the PFMA and to satisfy the various legislations as well as the international standard of museums and the ethics. So we had to go about doing these things to set up this institution. I'd now like to refer you to the financials of the Luthuli Museum, and the financials are better seen in the annual report itself. So I think that you're going to have to go through to refer to page 26, because you will have a far better view of it. In terms of our annual report, as you can see on page 29, the Luthuli Museum got a qualified report. And it was qualified on the basis that it did not have an accessions an assets register, and it did not have a complete record of all the assets that were in the institution. And the second one was that there was a difference of 53,000, which, as it says, an unsubstantiated difference of 53,000 that existed between the prior year surplus, a statement of financial performance, and accumulated surplus and net assets. That was the basis on which, obviously, the qualification happened, that we did not have an assets register and that there was a difference in our in this difference of 53,000. And then there were a whole lot of other matters that were raised in terms of the controls of the Luthuli Museum. I'll just go through them. The important ones was that there weren't policies in place. There was a lack of appropriate policies in terms of the plant, property, and equipment. The financials were financial disclosure. There was no strategy to ensure that the monitoring to identify and rectify problem areas, and that if there were any discrepancies in the financial statements. And in terms of governance, we didn't have an audit committee at that stage. We were operating using our financial committee to oversee the Luthuli Museum's financials. There was a bit of fruitless expenditure because the Luthuli Museum, while it was trying to register with SARS, it encountered it accumulated interest for not paying its returns on time. So those were problems that the Luthuli Museum faced. Also, item that was raised was that the Luthuli Museum the previous year hadn't in fact got a substantiated or got authority for its strategic plan. And also it wasn't reporting according to the PFMA on a quarterly basis to the National Treasury. So it was very, very difficult for the Auditor General to give the Luthuli Museum a clean financial or a clean report. However, Madam Chair, if you may indulge me for a minute, this year we've turned that around and we've got a clean report. So a year later, we've managed to, in fact, get a clean report for the Luthuli Museum, but that's not under review here. Just to go to the statement of financial performance for the year ended 31st March 2007, As you will see, the Luthuli Museum had a surplus for that year of 773,000, and there was also money carried over of 5.297 million, which the Luthuli Museum did in fact obtain permission from the Treasury to carry it over so that we could in fact spend on projects that were outstanding and to develop this organization. Sorry, I just want to go back. The statement of financial position for the year ended 31st March. This is our balance sheet. Our total net assets and liabilities at the end of 31st March 2007 was 6.354 million. And the reason for that was that we did not have a full complement of staff, and we're still in the process of engaging people for the Luthuli Museum. And our cash flow statement, or our net assets, stood at 6 million and 71. We at that stage had our cash flow was fine, and yes, but we did have a loss in that year. There was a laptop, a digital camera, and that was stolen from the museum, and that happened when between two directors were leaving, the contract director, and when I arrived, that wasn't there any longer, but it was returned. So it was something that was reported on our financial statements as well. The property does not belong to the Luthuli Museum. The property belongs to the legal owner of the property is the Public Works Department, but the Luthuli Museum undertakes repairs and maintenance of the building. And that's basically the Luthuli Museum's financial. Also, in the year under review, because we did not have staff at the Luthuli Museum, we did not have benefits for employees, like a pension fund and a retirement fund. But all of that has now been put into place as the Luthuli Museum. I'd like to conclude here and take questions, Chair. Thank you.
Somehow along the way you have some problems here and there, which members would like to know what was the solution. I think to kick start, I had you
talking about the stolen goods that they were brought back. Not just brought back, yeah? So what about the security and the investigation? And then you have to wait for the other person.
Chair, it's...
I just need to emphasize the concern I have, although I clearly understand reading your report, the situation that you so-called inherited, may I call it that, and the mentioning that you have a clean audit opinion. I mean, that clean to me is also no other matters, obviously, not only unqualified, involves much more than that you have a but, and I'm not going to raise all these issues. You've written off stuff that you don't tell us what the amount is that was written off in your report, only the items, and one would like to see the amount properly. My concern is, you know, we come from a history where we are now honouring icons of the false and the false struggle against certain regime. But in doing so, you actually put in here with a museum with a great man's name, and an icon to a lot of people in this country. But the name, to me, is actually going through the mud. If this is how we run museums that are renamed to support and to sell heroes of the past of the history of this country, then we can't afford to support like this. Then you should change the name of the museum. You can't put a bad audit report, bad management, bad staff, bad whatever. Because, you know, I mean, reading the lady with you, read how she put up the administration. I've never been in Parliament in 4 years, and starting off policy. I mean, you know, I find it a bit not on the level of running a very competent entity. And I think you should jack it up. Because otherwise you're not going to give the profile to this museum that it actually deserves.
Okay, thank you very much for the opportunity to respond to the question. I will start off by saying this year we're going to be 4 years old. On the 21st, the Literary Museum is going to be 4 years old. But to go back to your question with regard to the stolen items, there is security. There is security at the Luthuli Museum. It is totally. I absolutely agree with you that a laptop and a digital camera being stolen from the Luthuli Museum is unacceptable and cannot happen again. But what we did do, what the Luthuli Museum did do, in fact, was to do an investigation. We investigated it amongst the staff. We also reported it to the police, you know, and the police came to the site. They did an evaluation. They looked at the security. Yes, we've declared that. But we have since not had a similar instance at the Luthuli Museum. In terms of the posts and filling of the posts at the Luthuli Museum, yes, we have filled the posts. We have now a complement of 12 members of staff at the Luthuli Museum. But it is a great challenge. We are in Kwatuguza. There is still a pull towards urban areas. There are many people with a lot of skills that come there and remain at the museum, and then they get far better offers because they've got expertise on setup, you know, of an institution and other like-minded or like institutions, and the commercial sector are lapping them up because they're gaining so much of experience at the Luthuli Museum. So that's a challenge that we are facing. Like right now, I am trying to explain the financials to you. I'm not the financial officer. We don't have a financial officer at the Luthuli Museum. So because the individual was taken away by another startup institution, not a public entity, but a similar type of institution. I don't think that it was intended at all for the Luthuli Museum to have a, we have some important visitors and other non-important visitors. I think everybody is very important to the museum. You will get that from my staff, Tulani, no matter whether it's a local child or whether it is the Prime Minister. He makes everybody feel very special. Our visitor books always say that, and people who come from Etegwini to the Luthuli Museum always say how welcome they feel when they come to the Luthuli Museum, how special they are made to feel. We definitely do not make any distinction between our visitors, but we just thought that we would just profile the kinds of people that have, or you know, have seen us. But perhaps next time we will also say ordinary people as well. But we have many programs. We've been bringing the world to Grautville, and for example, we've been bringing Poetry Africa, and we've been a lot of young people have also been writing their poems and sharing it with important artists, with important poets. We have a writers' festival. We have this year we've had a film festival. So, and filmmakers in our area have also come out. So I don't think that Luthuli Museum is in any way or the other trying to distinguish between anybody. In terms of our challenges, the Luthuli Museum has numerous challenges. We are on regarded as being in a peri-urban area. Very difficult to get suppliers, to get the kind of resources that a museum can get in an urban setting. It's very much easier. Things like humidity, temperature control, those are things that are just taken for granted when you walk into a space, a museum. But to get it there, to get it going there, is a big challenge. But we overcome it. We're always very, very creative about that. In terms of the irregularities, I place them up front. These are the irregularities that the Luthuli Museum, had and are faced with. And yes, I do agree, we can't have anything, no black markers against our name. We've been working extremely hard to do that. And we've got it right this time round. And I hope that when I come to present that, you will see that it's really turned itself around. But yes, it is an institution that has just started up. It's a very new institution. It can't be, and we're working towards being like the Ezekiel Museum, like the well-established museum. It has a very small, it's a very short history of 4 years. So I think with the 12 members of staff that we have, we're going to keep the Luthuli Museum's nose very, very clean. We're going to try our utmost. That's very important to us, and it's central to us. One of the greatest challenges, that I'm glad you raised that, was you wanted to know what other challenges we face. We actually have a very minute budget, if you look at our budget. And it's small in comparison to our other brothers and sister institutions. So we're hoping that with a clean report, we will be able to fundraise ourselves so that we can increase that budget, so we can actually take the name of Luthuli, on a much grander scale. He was a global icon in his period, and I think that's what we're trying to achieve as well. Honoring our icons, I think I don't think that the Luthuli Museum, in terms of the statement that we are taking a very important man's name through the mud, I'm not really sure that it's not deliberate. And I think what is very, very critical, and in terms of governance in the sort of cultural landscape, is that perhaps institutions like this need to have, I've been in this sector for a long time, and one needs to have something like a toolkit that institutions like this can refer to, so that you mark off, as you're starting up an institution, you mark off this toolkit so that before you start it up, at least it has some of those pillars in place. This was an institution, like you say, why are we telling you about policies? But that is what it was faced with, and we needed to do that, to get it to be an institution. So it's important that we went through this process. In terms of the name, Inkosi Albert Luthuli Museum, that is not a name that is given by us. It was a name that was the department, when the institution was started up, it was started up and it's gazetted as the Chief Albert Luthuli Museum. We've had this debate quite a lot because a number of very concerned individuals feel that it should be called Nkosi Albert Luthuli. And we've had discussions with the family. We've had discussions with a number of people who knew him. And we've also looked at his own writings. And in his own writings, he refers to himself, he always signed off as chief. His family feel that it's very important that they retain chief, because that's what he was known as. So it's not something that we personally have decided to do. It was gazetted, we've inherited it, and we're living with it. In fact, we are not even called, we called the Luthuli Museum. We wanted to change that also, to Chief Albert Luthuli Museum. So, but your point is well taken, thank you.
I want to re-echo the fact that indeed, the institution has to sort of match the standard or the level of the stature of the man he is named after. And I think that's the point that we need to take home and underline it, probably with the right ballpark, because, you know, I was reading this pamphlet. It says Africa's first recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. And after four years, we don't seem to have actually gone to that kind of benefit. And I think that's what the committee is talking about. Number two, you are not vocal on the philosophy that Inkosi Albert Luthuli actually pursued during his Liberation Day, which I think the museum actually should be take that as one of the core values of what the man stood for. So that actually we keep and preserve that kind of legacy, which the institution or the museum is intended to do. For instance, there are issues like social cohesion and non-racialism, which are not prominent in your presentation. We as politicians, particularly those of us who come from KwaZulu-Natal, we have not only read about it because of the tool, but we have actually interacted members and even people who live with it. I mean, those are the kind of things which Texas was known about, which people would imagine that the museum would actually, you know, try to develop those kind of things so that the epitome and the whole intention of the
somehow maybe can boost the input of the status of the museum.
I'd like to note the Honourable Bengu in terms of the that perhaps my presentation wasn't vocal about Chief Albert Luthuli and social cohesion and non-racialism. Well, the next time it will be. Let's put it that way. Because I just absolutely wanted you to appreciate that this museum was in its set-up state. All of this was happening concurrently as well. Things like education programs, which Mr. Tusi was referring to, all of that was happening at the same time. A lot of the programs that we have, the exhibitions, etc., those like the Black Christ, all of that, that was about social cohesion, non-racialism, the programs to audition people in the area, to identify artists in the area, all of that is sort of moving towards enhancing the legacy and philosophy of Chief Albert Luthuli. In terms of the curator, Yes, the Luthuli Museum does have a curator, and it's now has a curator who is going out there making collections and developing a whole lot of research for the Luthuli Museum, and making the history of and legacy of Chief Albert Luthuli accessible on a national level. In terms of the risk assessment, the investment policy, and the other policies that I referred to in my presentation, those are now all in place at the Luthuli Museum. We have them in place. They've been accepted. An investment policy. They're in place. They've been accepted, and they are absolutely, they're now part of the governance structures of the Luthuli Museum. If you wanted to purchase Let My People Go, with pleasure. The Luthuli Museum does have copies of Let My People Go. It's just recently been reprinted. So yes, we have that. But we've been collecting letters and all sorts of things for the Luthuli Museum collection. Where we couldn't actually get the originals, or we can't get, obviously, originals, we've been going very vigorously getting copies of them and adding them to the Luthuli Museum collection. Page 24 and page 25. May I please ask for clarity in terms of, is it both the tables that you are wanting? Because this was both employees, including our contract workers as well. At a senior management level, there were two African females and one Indian female. Middle management was one African male. And at the supervisor and high-level skilled staff, one African male, two African females, and unskilled, one African male and two females. I'm looking at page 24. Yes, okay. Permanent staff. I know what, it's very confusing. In terms of, because if you look at the top, it says managers, right? If you add the two, it's one African female and one Indian. That's two females on the top, if you add that up. And there's two vacancies in that under managers, and we're supposed to have four people there. Okay, and so we were basically 50% staffed at that stage. Okay, and then in terms of the African female represented of the total staff, 25%, the Indian female, 25%. So that makes up the 50%. A vacancy is 50%. And then in terms of the other, so what we did was we actually put them into the managers and then all the other levels of staff. So you can see there were two African females that they made up the other. We're supposed to have had, we had 10 vacancies, and total number of staff there was supposed to be 12. And so we were 17%, if you look under African, we are 17% African fully staffed in permanent. And so we had 10 vacancies, that means there were 83% vacancy level at that particular point. And then over the page, the two resignations and terminations, the number of senior and middle management African staff. One of them, the contract was not renewed by the Luthuli Museum, and the other, because they were contract staff members, they in fact decided that they weren't going to be sure. They had a permanent job that came up, and therefore they opted to take on their a permanent position closer to home as well. Chair, I hope I've answered the question.
From the great Limpopo, my concerned historian.
I'm Peter Marito. I'm from the Housing Province. I'm a member of the Victoria Commission.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to be here from your side. My name is Peter. I'm a member of the community from Papua.
My name is Puneko Mzulu. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the Nelson Mandela National Museum.
Thank you. My
name is Kwezi Kampumlwana. I serve as Chief Executive Officer for the Nelson Mandela Museum.
My name is Kain Sodin, and I'm a member of the Council of the Nelson Mandela Museum.
I'm I'm not sure if someone is called CMG.
Hi everyone, I'm Pleasant Fahad from CMG Airport.
I'm Aldan Wood.
My name is Kenneth Makosi, also for PMG.
I think one can repeat that represents that who are more interested sometimes to see ladies among yourself. The right ladies sometimes we don't accept the more special we women. We want to see ourselves represented in every culture. So I think next time we bring some from the field. So we know each other now. You are there to present us there. I have already advised them that they talk to you. The decision not to be my word by word, but sometimes people look out the decision on the present dream. So after your presentation, then up to the regular subscription of Paris. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, and our thanks for asking us to be here this morning and to make this presentation on behalf of the Nelson Mandela Museum. As I've said, I'm a member of the council, and I'm here representing also Professor Khada Asmal, whom I think had explained why he couldn't be here himself. And so we have with us here this morning our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Mpulwana, who will be addressing you shortly, and our CFO, Mr. Ndludlu, who is here in support of our presentation this morning. I'd like to make an opening remark, Chairperson, and it relates to the request that we received from the Portfolio Committee about making this presentation. We initially were asked to speak about the 2006 and 2007 report. You'll remember that there were difficulties with that report. It had come late, and then also it produced, after it had been audited, a disclaimer from the Auditor General. We'd just like to say, and I think that Professor Asmal did try to explain this, Madam Chair, that the present council, the council that is now in charge of these governance and the oversight responsibilities for the Nelson Mandela Museum, wasn't in place at the point when that report was submitted, and so we didn't have the, if you like, authority to underwrite that particular report. And so the report was submitted in the absence of a council, and I'm going to ask our CEO to speak to that in a minute. The council was only appointed and put in place in April of last year. And we operated for almost the remainder of that year without a chairperson. The chairperson never reported, if you like, and it was only in the closing part of the year that after we had made a request to DAC that Professor Khada Asmal was appointed as our chairperson. So I put that simply by way of explaining why it is that we can't take responsibility for that earlier report. But I'd like to just say a word about this disclaimer and where we are now. This disclaimer was a big embarrassment to us. We don't want to beat about the bush around all of that. It remains a source of embarrassment. And we're very aware of the damage that it causes the reputation to the museum, but critically also to Mr. Nelson Mandela himself. And we're very conscious of our culpability in that. But I'd like to say to the Portfolio Committee that we have since December last year taken enormous steps, which our CEO will speak to in more detail, Madam Chair. And we have taken enormous steps to try and recover from this period of an absence of the council. You will hear, he will explain to you that we put committees in place, we put structures in place, and we now have a fully functioning committee, a committee that is almost hands-on involved in the life of the museum. And we hope in doing this that we will be able to build on the work of our predecessor council, but also move this museum to fulfill this great potential that it has. Because we believe that the national, that the Nelson Mandela Museum is a national asset. It's an important legacy project which we in the end would like Mr. Mandela himself to be proud about and proud of. Our chairperson, Professor Asma, repeatedly, you know, talks to us about this responsibility, and I think that everybody on this new council is fully committed to trying to make this vision of this museum work. And at heart, we see the opportunity that this museum has in Umtata and Kornu and at Mvezo as crucial sites for being able to show the world the simplicity, but yet the generosity and largeness of spirit of what Mr. Mandela is all about. So we want to use this museum as a catalyst to stimulate the significance of that area in relation to Mr. Mandela's life. We want the museum to become the center of cultural and intellectual life in that part of the world, and we think that we can, with a little more help and with a little more organisation, actually move the museum to become a place where the spoken word, where drama, where choral performances, where art presentations of all kinds can be put on, to make it possible for that area to become a center of intellectual and cultural life. We're very disturbed at the moment as a council, by the apparent deterioration of the life of that part of the world. And we see our museum, in partnership with the city council and partnership with the province, and we've been in discussions with them. We had a meeting about 2 months ago with the provincial and local government authorities, and we think that we have their support for this. We also hope to be able to stimulate our relationship with the Walter Sisulu University, and that between us we can make a really dramatic change to the quality of everyday life in Umtata. And we have great resources in these buildings. The Bunga, as you know, is a great, great and wonderful building. But it's a building which needs urgent attention. It needs renovation. There are leaks. There are rooms that are not usable at the moment. So we're very anxious about this jewel in the crown of that part of the world not being used as it should be used. We have plans for expanding and making use of the full repertoire of possibilities in that building. And the building is a natural centerpiece. It's a natural draw card for that area. Already, you know, with the local schools, we've developed relationships. And they are bringing young people to the museum, and we see the opportunity for a great deal more work like that. My colleague and our CEO here will lay out and explain what some of those opportunities might be. But I just want to make just two more points about this potential that this museum provides us for the country. We are hoping, and we've started on this journey already, we are hoping that the Nelson Mandela Museum will become the center of scholarship, research, and inquiry around the significance of Mr. Mandela's life. We're attempting to collect every single thing that has been written about him in the world, and we will hope that by doing so that we will be an attraction, a magnet for scholars, for people who are interested in understanding the significance of Mr. Mandela, will come to Mthatha, and in this way contribute to the revival of Mthatha. And so we're seeing this as the beginning of a process where we will have visitors, tourists coming into the area and being partners with us in this revival of Mthatha. We also have begun, and our exhibitions are going to illustrate this. We've begun a process of renovating our exhibition spaces. We've just launched a really marvelous exhibition of letters that young children from around the world have written to Mr. Mandela and to Mrs. Rosa Parks. And it's a really wonderful exhibition. This is a start of a series of crucial exhibitions that we will be having in the next few months. We've got a big exhibition coming up with the Apartheid Museum in Johannesburg. We have a number of seminars and colloquia that we are organizing in collaboration with the University of Fort Hare in East London, and colloquia to commemorate Mr. Mandela's 90th birthday. And I can only say to you, before I hand over to our CEO, now, Madam Chair, that things are looking up. We're very aware of our weaknesses, and he will talk to that. But we're wanting to use the energy and the commitment of our prison council to be able to realistically engage with the resources that we are and to take this opportunity, a gift that we have, of turning this museum into the jewel in our national assets that it really has. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Mr. Mpuwana. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Your first honorable
thank you, Madam Chairperson and honorable members. To quickly add to what our member of council has said, firstly, I would really like to start out on an apology. We had huge delays in the completion of the audit for the 2006-07 financial year, to an extent where the report was only received, I think, on the 11th of December of 2007, and that arose directly from a combination of factors, including the fact that we're firstly 15 days late in submitting. Because at that time, our finance department had only one person to do all of the different things, and we were nearly not coping well. And because that was the year when the term of council had expired, and therefore the audit committee was no longer there, and the internal audit had functioned very badly, external auditors could not place reliance on the internal system, so they had to set the threshold for what they examined very low, meaning that they had to do a lot more work than would normally be the case. So the report was normally received in July, was received in December, meaning that we really had 3 months to the end of the financial year 07-08 to to have received and taken note and used the concerns and suggestions of the AG for the year 2006-07. And I think this influenced how come even the report that should have been here in September only got to Parliament in May. So I really would like to apologize. Now, I take the opportunity to talk about the institution joining what the Member of Council has said. The museum was set up in 2000 on the 11th of February. It is on three sites. It's in Kunu, Mvezo, and the Punga building. These places are about 37 kilometers apart from each other, roughly. It is required that it should become not just a static collection, but a living memorial to the values and vision of Mr. Mandela. It's supposed to inspire and enrich all of those who visit it and serve as a catalyst for development. So that as people share in the heritage resources linked to him, they also participate in development, whether through tourism or education or culture. And this has tended to influence the work in which the previous council, and I know for a fact even the new council and the staff of the museum to be moving in that direction. And as I mentioned, the 2006-07 was quite a complex time for the museum as a reporting period. Prof. Stodden has talked about the potential of the museum. I won't really emphasize on that, except to say the new board has really come now with this view of completely renewing the museum, taking it to yet another level. And in terms of the range of programming, in terms of the work that must be done to the building, and in terms of how the department supports us to be adequately staffed, as it were, and to really address the concerns around governance that had arisen. Now, over time, especially in the period that we are reporting about, 2006-07, the council at that time took a view that we had passed the five-year mark, because the museum was only established in 2000, and there had to be a compelling initiative that would bring together different stakeholders closer to the museum to contribute to its vision and still feel that it's part of their own activities. And what I've identified in terms of this were two major initiatives, the Liberation Route and Friends of the Museum. And then there was also the idea that we need to work towards the World Heritage listing and to improve the way in which we do our operations and our programming and how we mobilize resources while we improve the way in which the organization is known and accessible, because it should not be just about the people who live immediately next to it. It's a national asset. And also to look for ways to grow organizational capacity and still remain focused on the core business. So by the time when the term of that second council expired in September, long before the financial year was finished, and we got the disclaimer, there was these type of strategic direction. And later on, when we have the opportunity to ask questions, we would refer in more detail to some of these. But this was happening on the back of chronic understaffing and budget imbalances that had a severe impact. I'll explain what I meant by this. You know, very quickly, when the museum was established and we subsequently joined it, had been an interim administration of only 8 tour guides, a supervisor of tour guides and a secretary, with a museum that has 3 sites and the kind of mandate that it was required to execute. After a serious struggle, well, we were able to find resources to appoint a CFO, and it was not until about 3 years ago that we could have somebody dedicated to programming and curatorship. So it's been a journey and it continues to be. And if we were to use these technical ways that people describe the direction in which organizations go, the vision and of the museum was to be a living museum that embraces development and is a fitting tribute to the legacy of Mr. Mandela, to be an effective steward of the heritage resources linked to him, that is the collections, the sites, and the stories, and to use these to impact development and inspire people through education, culture, and tourism. So it's not just for those people who go inside. And the values that guide us have included Ubuntu, service, integrity, and the commitment to development and learning. And the major priorities of the work that's done evolve around continuing to strive for good governance, having sustainable stewardship of and conservation of heritage resources, meaning that these things that we look after, the collections and the sites and the stories, must be available for this generation and for the future generation, and in some cases must support how they are used. And this thing of compelling mission-supporting programs, because for these resources to come alive was to have educational programs and that type of thing, which interpret the meaning of those, and continually make available the information about the existence of the museum as an outreach exercise, but also to create win-win relationships. This is also reflected in the strategic plan of the National Department. And then this human resources development, deploying and progressing them well, especially in the kind of context we have where we're so few people and they've had to multitask and to be trained extensively in a range of areas. Now, whereas we have those priorities, I want to quickly dive into the audit report, which I suspect was part of the many factors that led to our being invited, in addition to the normal oversight work that Parliament does. We had for the first time a very bad report, a disclaimer, and the Auditor General captured it in those words that they don't feel they have sufficient evidence to express an opinion. And they highlighted a number of factors that were cause for concern for them. And I want to quickly list them. Obviously, the one area was about property, plant, and equipment. The major thing that it was not barcoded gave them a concern. And they felt that they could not cross-check with the asset register that existed, because the barcode helps them know that each item is uniquely numbered. Now, there's been progress in terms of uniquely numbering all of the assets of the museum now. There is a delay on the barcode. There was also a huge concern about the intangible assets, the logo and the website specifically. There was a view that in accounting terms, it should have been treated as an expense, not as an asset. The reasons why we're treated as an asset instead of as an expense were discussed with the Auditor General, but the accepted view is that we're going to change it to be an expense item. And then there were concerns about the supply chain management. What had happened was that at about the time when the term of council expired, the contract with the security service provider also expired. And instead of going ahead and do a tender with no council in place, the view was to extend the contract of that service provider on a month-to-month basis. But with the result that the time in which there was no council became much longer, it meant that the threshold of money paid exceeds what you would normally buy by quotation. And then there are a number of others, but I won't bore the members of the committee, because I know they've looked at the annual report and also at the summary that was given. But these are the list of concerns. But we thought we should lift them again to confirm that they've also been brought to the attention of the new council that the informed part of the turnaround we're busy trying to do. Now, the new council adopted a governance improvement program because when we saw the severity of the situation and we realized the inadequacies that we faced, because at that time there was only one member of the finance department, CFO, we asked the department to urgently assist, which they did by providing somebody to give advice, as it were. And out of that process, a governance improvement program was designed. Out of recognizing certain basic things about what bad outcomes do for an organization and in a situation. And to have an open mind that says we need to take to heart these issues as they are and make sure that we address the issue and we don't need to be defensive about it, however painful the issues raised that may be. And we put in place a system of really being supported by our council and implementing certain measures, which I'll quickly highlight now. And we're very aware that major victories would not be scored by 2007-08, because with only 2 months or 3 months of that financial year within which we had received the audit report of the previous year. And the framework within which we work is that if there's a meaningful strategy and stakeholders are satisfied and it's clear what goals have to be realized, then the organization would look slightly more effective. And there has to be compliance with the laws, especially that govern the public resources that are given to us. And the structures that guarantee and oversee this now, these are collapsed with the end of the term of office. Now they are in place, the council and various committees, not just the audit committee. And then adequate management capacity. Now, the finance department complement remains a concern, but one more unit has been added and in turn. But there's been robust interaction with the department, and we know that there's results coming according to the reports that we've been getting. And the process we've been using very quickly and is summarized there in front of us. I can come back to this and when there are questions. But basically, we've collected the information and we could summarize what was the problem. And we've put in place a plan of what things that we need to do. Now, honorable members have got this. At the back of it, there's that annexure, which explains step by step the things that we would be putting in place to deal with that problem. That's really the project plan. And this has been ratified by our council. And so this has included short-term and medium-term, what we call, interventions. Now, in terms of this year's audit process, we've been on track. We're at a point where we're finalizing the audit report this week for printing. So we don't expect issues of being late. And very briefly, that improvement plan has included the appointment of an audit committee is in place. They have new terms of reference. Internal auditors are in place. Capacity issues in the finance department are partially resolved, but there's discussions with the department. The labeling of assets, regular bank reconciliations. Now, I put a framework for weekly, but even with two people, that area is still suffering. Because also when we did this, it was coinciding with the audit. And so I must say we are behind in the weekliness. But there's also the way in which the report from the bank has a lead time issue. The security adjudication had been completed, and then the detailed budget for 2007-08, which have been what was implemented during the financial year. In the letter, it was asked for us to talk about performance information as well. Now, that is detailed in the report that members have in tables like this. And this part talks about where does our money come from. And the next part talks about where is it spent on. The bulk of our funding comes from state contribution, and for that financial year, it was about 12.2 million. Donation, we don't charge entrance fees. But instead we allow people to make donations into a donations box. And then also fundraising ventures are another source of income. For example, the lottery was able to get us money that enabled us to have two buses that we use for some of the youth programming activities that we have. Business ventures, this really relates to running out of venues at this stage and selling T-shirts and that kind of thing. Sales of services, this is envisaged, but it's not yet in place. We had submitted requests for capital investment. As Professor Sodino was talking about, the Bunga building, we're using 40% of it, which was refurbished and renewed, the 60% that needs huge adaptation to be able to work as a museum. Because that building was originally used for something else. We'd asked for resources for exhibition facilities at Mvezo and Kono, and then for ongoing maintenance of buildings and facilities, and to try and have an interpretive center at Mvezo. Some of these did not work yet. We didn't get all of that. Our new council has interacted with the department to accelerate some of that, and we're confident that it's getting started. That page is a very brief summary of the resources received. It really talks to what I was saying, what are our sources of money. And then it breaks it down to say government in that year under review was giving 12.2, and there was a special grant of 586 towards the nomination dossier for the Liberation Road. Now, there's a whole lot of detail that I won't go into about that, but it became clear of our interactions with UNESCO that we wouldn't get nomination onto the World Heritage Site for a Mandela Museum site alone, but we could get it as part of the new framework of Liberation Road to Independence in Africa. The rental of conference facilities was another source of income. Sponsorship that was raised in the Charity Challenge match, which I know honorable members may have noticed, did have a problem because it had two objectives: to profile the museum to be part of the outreach campaign, but also to raise money. But in terms of raising money, it did not do well. In terms of reaching people, in terms of changing, of meeting the objective of council to say we must change the profile of the organization, people shouldn't say, where is that, what is that? It did succeed. And then donor funds from the National Heritage Council and from the National Lottery, for respectively the Liberation Road and the purchase of museum pass, and then the gain from non-current assets. That was really about replacement of computers that had been lost, but now were able to be bought at a lower rate. The major area of where does this money go that we get? Obviously, there's the support functions of administration, finance, security, very crucial. In the first year of the museum operating in 2000, August, it lost two medals. But to this day, people still remember the museum as the museum that loses things. But two medals were lost in that year only. And ever since then, there's never been a security incident because that area has had to be strengthened in a huge way. And when you go there, you see the cameras everywhere, there's guards, and so on and so on. But that area continues to need to be improved. This is why we work with SAP security advisors to continue to review our system, and then human resource development. Then in terms of core business, you find heritage resource management and programming. Exhibition, this thing of conservation and research, and then doing programs like youth camps, like workshops, like public events, that learn and share the legacy of Mr. Mandela through education, arts, and culture. Creative expressions is when young people come and do artwork that interpret the story that we tell, basically, or perform music. And then obviously offer guided tours, which often benefit the visitors and sometimes the community. And then enterprise development, this again is an area where we the progress, the kind of progress we've made, is where you find that we get onto the databases of the tow operators, which allows them to get big numbers of tourists that spend reasonably well in the area, and so on and so on. If one looks at the statistics that were in the annual report about our visitor numbers, you will see that we've never been able to get that percentage of international tourists if we did not relate to, for example, tour operators. And then there's this thing of the positive economic impact for the museum, of the museum in the community. Whereas the museum is not primarily an economic entity, but it has had to make an economic impact. And the way it does is in terms of its procurement practices and in terms of facilitating visits by groups that do spend. Service delivery improvement plan. Now, if things have been going, if there are these good objectives and there have been these challenges, what are the things that are in place to improve services? Now, that is summarized in there, but it's detailed in the table that is in the circular given to members. And I would like not to read, because I'm scared that I'm almost out of my time. And in terms of strengthening organizational management, the one area was to strengthen the human resources area, and then within that, a number of those objectives have been achieved. Others are in progress in terms of interaction very closely with the Department of Arts and Culture and looking closely at the public, single public service bill, because some of those issues that have to be changed can be impacted by the direction that the national policy on the public service calls. Then there's a number of posts in the museum that were approved but unfunded, and some others that are approved and funded. And our challenges tended to relate to approved posts that are not funded, because unlike other entities or departments, when they get established, they say, what is your establishment plan? And then you know that the staffing is not an issue. In our case, that was not the case. We had to grow incrementally, step by step, and that's really put a challenge on a number of things. Management and council see the area of information technology resource as very strategic. And so there's a lot of thinking going into how to optimize on the possibilities provided by information technology. And some of the partnerships we're entering into with, like, Michigan State University include exploring how to do that. And, honorable members, I really want to thank you for your patience, for giving us the opportunity to present here. We're aware of the challenges that we face. We've put in these modest plans that I've talked about to try and address them. And we trust in the support of the members of government as a whole and of South African public. We know that we must not disappoint. We will continue to do our best. Thank you very much. No, I will listen to members now.
Different voices, our freedom fighters,
I don't know whether I have already visited the Mandela Museum several times. Did you happen to capture his voice, that golden voice, for our grandchildren when they visited the American Museum? Because otherwise, if that voice is gone, it will be history. Because that golden voice, that voice needs to be heard by our grandchildren. And then one would still again ask, what role did the public works department really play in the museum? Because it's not one man show that will be waiting for us and guys to tell us different. Whatever the volumes and hands are in there, like I said, it's an icon. All departments might be really extending their hands to achieve that the survival of the museum.
Thank you.
You mean in this particular? Okay. I'm going to ask the CEO to take up most of these questions, Madam Chair. But can I just start with the last about the gender balance? And I'm sorry that I didn't speak to this immediately after you had raised it when we had arrived. We're very aware of the fact that this is a male-dominated council and staff. We have made an approach to the Department of Arts and Culture for expanding the representation on our council. This council is not self-dominated, as you know. It's nominated by the minister, and so we have asked the minister to improve that balance. In the lives of the councils at the moment, we only have another year of office left, if you like, and we're very mindful of the need to even before this council reaches the end of its term to have more representation on the council. As far as the staff is concerned, I'd like the CEO to talk to that matter. We have discussed it, however. There are a whole range of questions that the honourable members have asked. Some of them are policy issues, and some of them are quite practical. And so, if between the two of us, CEO, we could respond to that. Your question, Madam Chair, about Comrade Madiba's voice, we should have brought. We have a CD with recordings of important speeches that he has made, including the speech, a very crackly recording of the speech that he made at his trial. So they give you goosebumps. They are really important pieces of our legacy, and we should have brought copies because we have copies to distribute. But I'd like the CEO to answer the remainder of the question. And thank you, honourable members. Can I start with the employment equity? That scenario reflects what applied in 2005-06. Whereas we have had no substantial addition to the staffing, we have had reasonable changes to the rank. As you may recall, when I explained that because of the understaffing in certain strategic areas, we have had to do accelerated training and multitasking. So actually a number of staff members, I think two of them females and one male, who were in the second last row, have moved up to high level skilled in terms of that. And then an additional, two more people, females, have gone into the area middle management and high level because of a new appointment and because of a promotion. The situation at the top remains as it is. It's been a function partly of what is available in the market, but also a function of the fact that we have not had room to do expansion to the extent that we would like. It's something that we constantly look at. But obviously the proof is only in what we eventually have. I accept that. Honorable Zulu, there is this issue of, yes, Mr. Mandela's life is not confined to the three sites, but as member of council, Professor Sojin was indicating, the function of how the museum was declared to be these three places resulted from the consultations that had happened at the time, and I suppose how the minister is empowered to choose. But for us, operationally, it's very strategic that we are linked to the places that you mentioned, including Fort Hare even. And the liberation route, which I mentioned earlier on, is one of the steps that we are taking where we don't have to take over and own the liabilities and opportunities, but that association, so that in terms of our programming, in terms of what a visitor can experience, and in terms of what we can offer, there is that linkage and the nodal points. We continue to hope that, subject to state resources, there shouldn't really be a limit on how the institution expands, but to cope with what we have. And the method of, the federal method of linking associated sites will achieve some of those objectives. What is in each site? In the different sites, to offer different experiences. If you come to the Bunga building, you would get the kind of experience I think you get in many museums. There are collections that display, and it's where also the administration of the museum is. But if you went to Kono, which is a very beautiful, I'd like one day honorable members to make a visit there actually. There's a conference center because it's aimed to be a place of youth programming. Its alternative name is called Nelson Mandela Youth and Heritage Center. They've got facilities, chalets where young people can sleep, sharing the dormitory type of thing. And then they do lots of artistic activities and that type of thing. But we've also put in a temporary exhibition. The latest one is the one that Professor Sudin mentioned, the one of children's letters to Mr. Mandela and to Mrs. Park, and would put in other exhibitions as time changes. But it offers you the landscape of Mr. Mandela's childhood. And then obviously Mvezo is the best place. Lastly, the question of the size, the council is 10 members, 9 women and 1 man, 9 men and 1 woman. The burial issue, I think the family and the presidency lies about that. I don't have the jurisdiction on it. But to the extent that it is in the Eastern Cape, and to the extent that it is within the immediate vicinity of where they work, it's relevant. We don't look forward to that day, but it would have to be part of what is interpreted. Lastly, public works. We continue to look for ways to improve the way in which we can work with public works. Sometimes easy, sometimes not. part of their challenge is they work on an agency basis. They have to get money from the mother department, the way they usually explain it, to be able to spend on your building. And then there are thresholds where they say, no, that one is below what they should do. And in other cases, as in the case of the Punga building, the rotation system, it can give you architects who don't have experience of working with heritage buildings. And then you find that there's a deadlock now about, well, they cannot work there and cause more damage than should be prevented. And so the process of starting all over again can really take time. But we feel encouraged because with the new port, there's been very robust interaction, both public works and with the department, which gives us ground to say there may be prioritization of some of our infrastructure challenges. And I really like the additional suggestions of the Honorable Chairperson, and I will not be able to answer except to say we accept the suggestion. Thank you very much. The Auditor General and later on the CFO, the way they explained to me was that in terms of the accounting standards, there are different ways in which certain products or goods can be treated. Our logic for treating it as an asset and as a capital item, in my language, would say inkunzi, because it would give birth to more and more. Because we kept the logo like this, and we would put it on water and sell it. So the website would advertise things that are available for sale. And so that was the basis for treating it as an asset, that it was not just a cost, there's expected future benefit from it. But their reason was that because it's internally generated, because what we had done, and we're saying we have not internally generated it, we have done a competition of all South Africans to make suggestions of what it should look like. And so that was our side of the story. And then they've shown us different clauses which can be interpreted to mean what has to be said. And if your council and of management, if it leads to a qualification and there's nothing that we will lose by changing, let's just change and do what is expected. And so now we changed over to saying, okay, it's an expense. So it had to do with accounting conventions, basically. But obviously what they were concerned about is that if it's disclosed as an asset, it has the effect of reducing expenses and increasing the asset value.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My CEO has said, there is an accounting statement which actually puts forward as to how you must actually treat expenditure on in commented on activities interpreted as logos and just as intangible assets. That statement, in fact, we actually agreed in the first place that we are actually establishing the logo in order with a view to actually generate income in the sense of licensing it out for the production of some saleable goods, which will actually sell in the sense of which will sell better with our logo on it, on them. And then in that sense, we felt that it should actually be capitalized. But the provisions of the accounting statement, were actually brought to us that if it's actually internally generated, it should actually be expensed and not capitalized. We actually obliged. But it was actually after the report had actually been issued, that is the adverse report, citing that particular treatment as the basis for one of the basis for disclaimer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Why is this item even mentioned? It would be very interesting to know. For if you have the employer, an annual strategy, whatever you call it, to have an item called proposal strength. Not according to me, it should be talking about employment for the retraining. I'm just interested, why did you even put this in here? Thank you for that.
I'm recording a question.
No, Honorable Member, it arose from the template that we had been given via our department. And it's a material disclosure. Because I think oversight bodies, if I understood them correctly, wanted to be not caught by surprise or when there's a match. But no, we've been retrenched last week. And we must declare that there's none planned in the coming period. Yes.
Thank you.
Can I express our gratitude, Madam Chair? I'd simply like to say a very big thank you to the Portfolio Committee for receiving us here this morning. Yes, we were very nervous. We were very anxious coming into and preparing for this. As the comrade says yesterday, we were expecting a whipping. We have tried very hard, and I want to say this, to not be accused of impropriety, of improper behaviour, and of squandering this opportunity that has been given to us. And I I'm sure I speak for the council, fully support the accountability and the oversight role that the Portfolio Committee plays. We would like to thank you and we appreciate the support that you have given us here this morning. And I speak, I'm sure, on behalf of Asmal as well and all the members of our council. And the next time we come, Madam Chair, I promise you the gender representation will look better. Thank you. We won't wait for the next time we see you. We will send it in the post.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.